Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, good evening, you groovy ghoulies. You found another episode of the Video Nasty Project. What's tonight's movie, you ask? Tonight we're watching The Night Train Murders. It's an Italian ripoff of an American remake of an Ingmar Bergman movie, which was inspired by a Swedish folktale from the Middle Ages. Here, just watch the trailer and you'll figure it out for yourself.
It's the night before Christmas. Margaret and Lisa are going home for the holidays. But don't bother to wish them Merry Christmas. Their future isn't going that far.
Let's find a compartment with our people.
Well now, look who's here.
You can say to yourself, it's only a movie. But it won't help this time. And don't waste time looking for an ending you can live with.
I think you should take them right off, dear. Or we'll never see your little Mickey. No, let her do it by herself.
Come on, you bitch. What are you waiting for?
Your ticket takes you one stop beyond the end of the line. The last stop on the night train. Every seat in this theater becomes a coach seat to hell. And if you're in one, you'll feel it.
Do it one way. Let's do it another, huh?
You can say to yourself, it's only a movie. But it won't help. You'll know you've been closer to the last stop than any living soul would want to be.
Hey, we'll only cut her a little.
He'll see. You'll love it once your virginity's gone.
You know, I was deflowered this way.
Maybe this is too close. The last stop on the night train.
So we just got done seeing The Night Train Murders, a.k.a. Last Stop on the Night Train, New House on the Left. Basically, this movie pretty shamelessly rips off Last House on the Left. So we've got two groups of people. We've got the criminals and we've got the girls. We've got, on the criminal side, we've got Curly and Blackie. And these two guys are really low-class ruffians.
They start off the movie by mugging Santa.
A street Santa.
What an absolute bastards they are. They just approve that they're bastards by... Yeah. And then the third part of the criminals is the mysterious lady. She doesn't actually have a name. She's just referred to in the credit as the lady. She represents the upper class. She is the counterpoint to their low class thuggery. And then on the other side of the coin, we have the two girls, Margaret and Lisa. And they are these Italian girls who are vacationing in Berlin. And it's right over Christmas. It's a Christmas movie, kids, just like Die Hard. Mm. And they're going home for Christmas break. They hop on a train. The train's heading south. winds up getting sidelined and by a bomb scare. So they're like, well, we can stay here and wait for the track to get cleared up, but that's going to be like 4 hours. Meanwhile, that train just over there, that one, it's going to be leaving in about half an hour. We'll get there half an hour sooner because it's a shorter route. So they'll say, okay, well, so they hop over onto the second train car. It's dark. There's nobody in there. They find a cabin. They set up shop.
The first train, which you see predominantly during the daylight, is two tones of gray and red. And the red is a nice stripe running down the middle of it. And it's a modern train. It's brightly lit inside. There's lots of people aboard it. The second train is all either black or dark gray or some other dark color.
Dark forest green.
Yeah, it's hard to make out.
And military.
And very few people on
this. It's a big military blocky thing.
Yeah, and that's an ugly, creepy looking train.
So it's the two dichotomies of the world. It's the light, happy side of the world and then the bad side of the tracks, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So the girls, they go over there. Meanwhile, the two thugs, Blackie and Curly, they also come over. They come over with the mysterious lady.
The blonde.
They find the two girls, and, well, unpleasantness happens. And that's pretty much the story. It follows more or less the same beats as Last House on the Left. Girls get assaulted. The criminals get off, intercept with the parents. The parents have their revenge, roll the credits.
However, the ending is also kind of subverted, because one of the criminals, the blonde woman, gets away. She manages to convince the father that she's just kind of along with these guys and she's not involved with any wrongdoing that they've done.
Well, she's clearly way above their pay grade. These guys are low-class thugs from Italy. She's this society woman. And she's like the parents. I mean, obviously they're cut from the same cloth. So, oh no, I'm not like that. I'm not like, in fact, when Curly gets his comeuppance, he tries to grab the woman by the ankle. She turns around, kicks him a couple of times in the head. It's like, get the hell away from me.
That's one of the divergences that Night Train Murders has against Last House on the Left, where the message is a class warfare message. The mysterious lady, she represents the bourgeois, the upper class, the society. And Curly and Blackie, they are the blue-collar grunts. Mm-hmm. They're the proletariat. And so the interesting thing that the bourgeois lady does is she manipulates Curly and Blackie all the way through the movie to do all the crimes, do everything for my pleasure, go do all these bad things, which they were probably inclined to do anyway.
Yeah, and then Mrs. Blondie Locks here. Well, she has been aloof and above everything, and has the thin smile, you know, kind of the pins her gaze on people and smiles them into a corner. And then when the shit happens, she takes it out on Lisa. He said, "You're faking. This isn't real. You're faking. Quit faking."
This is after Lisa has died from blood loss,
and it was a slow death too, because Lisa's just fading away, and they do nothing for her until, and then after, and post facto, this woman just goes off the rails and throws her around the cabin and hits her and tries to wake her up and shit, and she's dead.
And I thought it was interesting, as Curly is giving her the knife of the vag, he's kind of reluctant and not really willing to do it, and the bourgeois lady, she comes along and finally, after all of this time, puts her hand and gets her hands dirty and shoves it in a little bit further. She's the one that pushes it over the edge.
Well, the thing is, initially we don't even realize that she's evil. You know, we just perceive her as being another person on the train. One really interesting thing about her is the use of her hat and her veil. She has a black hat, and when we first see her, she's got a veil and she's talking with another guy before she gets on the train, and she kisses him. And you think, oh, okay, they're just a regular couple, and he's saying goodbye to her, and so on and so forth. But a bit into the movie, on the first train, when she goes into the bathroom and encounters Blackie, she takes the hat off.
And, yeah, she lifts her veil.
Yeah, she lifts her veil. At the very end of the movie, after Blackie and Curly have been killed, she puts her hat back on and puts the veil back down.
This is my public face, the veil, and then she takes off, and that's her private face, and that's where the evil is, and once everything is done, she puts it back.
And there was a bit partway into the movie, probably like less than a quarter of the way in, where the parents are down in their Italian house having guests over for dinner, and one of them is talking about, you know, it's the rich people's responsibility to cure the ills of society. We cause this. Is that he's a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and one of the other people, this rich woman, said, "Us?" But, you know, as if to say we're innocent. You know, you can't be serious. We're not in. We don't have anything to do with this.
But you've also got the bourgeois lady leading these thugs down into greater villainy. They probably would have raped the girls, but I don't think they would have done the thing with the knife had she not persuaded them to do it.
And at the dinner party, one of the other things that I thought was interesting, one of the other the facets, was that the doctor, the parents, he is very pacifistic. He's not a full-on pacifist because obviously later on in the movie he flips his lid.
Snip.
But right then and there, he's all like, no, we, you know, society, we can't do this. We have to, you know, they have to sort themselves out. We cannot take a hand in this.
Which, of course, he does later. And the message passed around the table is that, you know, rich people do nothing. And so, you know, the general public just kind of devolves into this kind of immoral, amoral, you know, just massive people.
But this is an interesting message in that we've got one guy saying that we have to do something and another guy saying we can't do anything. And then you've got the evil Darth bourgeois lady who actively is doing stuff, but it's not good stuff.
And she's doing it with her private face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one thing we haven't touched on yet is the voyeur guy. So here they are. Blackie and Curly and the bourgeois lady, they're getting busy with the two girls. And then all of a sudden this face appears in, like, out in the corridor. There's this older gentleman, the guy who accidentally broke the handle off the car, who keeps the whole car now isolated because he did that.
Yeah.
And he just starts watching, and he's, like, looking in and kind of very fascinated. And then one of the thugs notices, brings them in, and starts to, it's like, okay, now you're going to take a role in this. You're going to take a hand in it.
Because once again, it's the blonde. She notices this guy standing outside, and I think it's Curly that grabs him and brings him in and tells him to go down on Margaret, who's already been beaten twice. And then...
And raped already.
And they get so... But they eventually get so into it with the girls that this man gets up and just walks out and then gets the hell out of Dodge and eventually gets off the train. He's stuck there, eventually goes to a phone booth and calls the cops. But he had to wait at first, as if, like, this was a big deal to call the cops because a couple of girls are being raped on a train.
His presence was an interesting message from Aldo Lado, who was kind of saying, okay, hey, you audience, you're watching this extravaganza unfold before you. You are the voyeur looking in, and now you're participating.
Also, another thing is the man's social class is a little bit undefined. He looks a bit on the nicer side.
He didn't strike me as a full-on bourgeois, but he wasn't one of the proletariat.
He's well-to-do.
He was well-to-do. He was in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's comfortably...
And that's an interesting message in and of itself, too.
He's in the comfortable class. Not mm-hmm. rich, but well above not poor.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he gets away, which I guess implies the audience can just get up and leave the theater anytime you want, rather than being stuck in this box you're watching.
But you also notice he actually stepped up to the plate and it took a small measure of social responsibility.
Yeah, but
he reported a crime.
But it took him a while to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not completely 100% morally solvent.
No.
I mean,
he did rape one of the girls.
Yeah, well, yeah. But he was doing it under duress. I mean, he was older. He probably couldn't have gotten away from these two young, virile guys, one with a knife. And there's no way he could have overcome them, so he just basically did what he had to do to keep his throat from being cut.
So let's talk about the technical aspects of the movie, because we've gotten into the message and the plot and the story. The strength of it is this movie looks fucking gorgeous.
It also mm-hmm. sounds gorgeous. I loved the music in this movie. The music was fantastic.
You know you've got a classy video nasty when you get Ennio Morricone to come in and do your score.
The opening credits music was really strong. All of the mood-setting music for all of the scenes was strong. The ending credit music was good.
He pretty much drew upon what he did for Once Upon a Time in the West. And Blackie, I think, he played a harmonica all the way through this. Yeah. So you get a lot of the music's coming in from off screen, a little bit like the shark music from Jaws. Mm-hmm. And he just starts playing this coming in, and it's very, very creepy.
Yeah, and in fact, it was so subtle, I completely forgot it wasn't on the soundtrack. It was in the scene. Yeah. And when he's in the waiting room with the other two at the town where Lisa's parents live, and he's just sitting there doing what he does.
Beyond the music, the look of the movie is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. The way that they lit the movie, once the girls get onto the second train, and it starts getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and darker. And as their situation gets more bleak, the movie looks more and more bleak.
The way shit just changes. It goes from the innocent, normal kind of, well, we're just riding the train at night, to these rapists come in, and all of a sudden that's a lurid blue color.
And there's a predominant blue theme throughout the whole movie, so it kind of alludes to that dark climax.
There's this one scene in the very opening part of the movie, which I really liked. There's a big parliament-looking building that's right beside a river, and there's swans on the river, and there's people walking along the sidewalk that parallels the waterway, and it's big, it's open, it's bright, and it just, each particular stage of the story, it just contracts. You were mentioning claustrophobia, you know, and the increase in darkness, and the darkest, most claustrophobic moment is when the girls are being raped and abused. And then it starts getting brighter again and more open.
And it almost like somebody flipped a switch.
Mm-hmm.
So they knife the girl's vag. You get the close-up on her screaming. It goes into a tunnel. It goes all black. And then it's daylight. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the night has now passed and now they have to face the next day.
There was a lot of good shots out in the country. I mean, you get the idea that this doctor and his wife live in this really nice, although suburban kind of property. It feels like the suburbs are not entirely country, so they're not that isolated, but they're still out kind of middle of, you know, elsewhere.
And you can tell that they're not in the Po River Valley of Italy either, which is basically the biggest, well-built part of Italy. They're still up in the mountainous part of Italy that's leading up to the Alps, you know, because the topography of wherever the heck it is they're living, it's pretty hilly.
One of the things I thought was really well done about the movie was that it was all this claustrophobia, all this closed-in blue, confined space, and it wasn't really violent at all. If you're going into this movie looking for visceral blood and guts, you ain't going to get it.
There's hardly any.
Yeah, it's mostly implied. I mean, even the sticking the knife up the vag was implied. And the only time you see anything even approaching a visual shot is the handle sticking out down here.
Well, there's blood all over her.
And she's clearly just sitting on it.
It's really a lot of implied violence. It's very claustrophobic, and the lighting just makes you feel much more oppressed than the movie actually is. The worst that we get is about a shot glass's worth of blood on her legs and the naked butt as the other one runs down the corridor and then jumps off the train.
And there's the blood when the two thugs get killed.
Yeah.
You know, Curly gets the stuffing knocked out of him by the doctor.
Oh, yeah, because he flips out and grabs an IV stand and just starts beating him in the face with the IV bottle. This is back in the days when bottles were glass.
He busted over his face.
And he stabs him a couple times using the IV stand like a spear. And he also shotguns Blackie repeatedly.
That's one thing I wish the movie did better, was that it would have been nicer to have gotten a bigger cathartic release at the end. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, okay, I beat him with an IV stand, I shot the other guy in the head. Okay, these are, you know, appropriate justices for the true criminals. But I would have liked to have, you know, get out the chainsaw like they did in Last House and just absolutely fucking go bananas.
Or blast off a body part or something. I mean, take away his manlyhood one way or the other, plus the hand he used the knife with. You know, I mean, let the punishment fit the crime, for God's sake.
Yeah. And although admittedly they did subvert the ending with the blonde getting away, I like it when the bad guys got their comeuppance. And it would have been nice to see her get, like, at least punched or something.
Well, that would have undermined the message that Aldo Latta was trying to convey.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if this were any other decade, the message might have been a little different. But back then, they're basically saying, well, sometimes the good guys lose and the bad guys get away.
In this case, it's a bit of both.
Well, because you could hear the police sirens in the distance coming to their rescue. So obviously standing over the two corpses, doctor or no, he's in a world of trouble. So you know his life is destroyed.
He does a really good job of really pinning down a lot of really bad habits people have in this film that contribute, I think, to the overall malaise going on. Like, for instance, this one guy in the corridor is smoking a cigarette on the train, and there's a young girl, possibly his daughter, standing right next to him. So smoking around kids.
There's a lot of smoking in this movie. I mean, you've got the one big bald guy smoking a evil smelling cigar. You've got Lisa and Margaret. They smoke
around this kid. They don't give a shit.
The thugs. They smoke. They bum cigarettes off of the girls, or maybe they bum lights off them, and there's several other people smoking too. It's like you wouldn't see that in a modern movie with on a train.
I think malaise is a good way to describe the overall feel of the movie. Kind of a malaise, a despair, just kind of, it feels very dark, even when it's not dark.
Yeah, kind of stuck in the kind of this honey-like, existence where everything just plods along and nothing picks up until later.
Also, I noticed that none of the secondary characters really stood out at all. You know, they just kind of seem bland and blended into each other, which might be another aspect of the movie-making art. You know, the only characters that really stood out are the primary characters.
Well, it's still a pretty small cast anyway. I mean, had, the two girls, the three bad guys, the two parents, and
the voyeur.
And the voyeur, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got anything else left you got to say about?
Yeah, actually, Blackie and Curly reminded me of two characters from this Ralph Bakshi cartoon, Hey Good Lookin'. In fact, they were almost exactly these characters as live action. I mean, you had Crazy Shapiro, who's got the Jufro, and you got, what's his name? Vinny, who is this Italian. And Blackie reminded me visually a lot of Vinny and Curly reminded me a lot visually of Crazy. In fact, in both movies, Vinny and Crazy hold knives to the necks of Blackie it's Crazy holds a knife to Vinny's neck, and Curly holds a knife to Blackie's neck. And I was thinking to myself, God, you could cut and paste these guys in each other's movies, and it would, go off really well.
Yeah, I've also seen that movie, and it only reminded me of it after you mentioned it, but yeah, they're archetypes.
And Bakshi originally shot a live action version back in the mid-70s, around the time before this movie came out. And I'm thinking, maybe the producers got one of these guys saw each other's movie or something like that and put some elements of something
possible,
in.
But I kind of think it's more along the lines of tapping into a common archetype.
Yeah, thugs, basically. Yeah. So, thumbs up for that kind of accidental, synergy there, similarity.
So do you have anything else left you got to say?
Nope.
All right, I guess that's the Night Train murders then, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. So, was the Night Train murders appropriate to leave off of the DPP list?
Oh, hell no. That needs to stay on the frickin' list.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily that it was violent, super violent. It wasn't that it was gory or visceral. What it was disturbing as fuck.
If they edited out that one scene or changed it somehow or did something so that it wasn't as nasty as it wound up being, I would have been okay with this movie. But all the rest of it is comparatively tame.
But we have learned by this point of the series that sexualized violence is an absolute no-no for the DPP. So that's probably why it wound up on the list, is the long rape and revenge part of the movie.
Yeah. Except for the one thing.
Vag invasion by knife. I mean, that is definitely not good.
I like the claustrophobia aspect. That's one of the cool things about the cinematography of this movie. But they definitely build up to that particularly, dare I use the word, nasty moment.
All right, then. So that was easy. It's on the list. It's on the list. It's on the list. That's a rare thing this far into the non-prosecuted list.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Brad, did you like the Night Train Murders?
Mostly. I liked the cinematography. I liked the scenery. I sort of liked the acting. I really liked the cool notion of the story happening on a train. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Murder on the Orient Express.
Did you like it?
Oh, yeah. It was really solid. Well acted. I mean, they had great use of locations, especially in mm-hmm. Berlin at the beginning. They had great use of the trains and everything. I mean, you get a sense of scale on this movie. I mean, the acting is spot on. These sleazy guys, I mean, they're clearly out of their depth in Germany. They're Italian tourists or whatever, and they're just living down the sleaze.
I love the hell out of this flick. It takes all of the rough edges that Last House on the Left has, and it smooths them over and gives it to you in a much stronger package.
Yeah, plus Last House didn't have any money. These guys were basically shooting from the hip out of film school and going in the backwoods of New York or Connecticut or wherever it was filmed and just doing their thing and kind of just following their nose, whereas Aldo Lado is clearly a pro. I mean, he's had access to all this location and a train and all this other stuff. Those guys, you know.
Two trains.
Yeah, those guys didn't have access to that. They had backwoods and crazies.
If you like the slick polish of an actual movie, go with Night Train Murders. If you like the raw, visceral, in-your-face violence, go with Last House. I swear to you, one of these days we're actually going to get around to reviewing The Virgin Spring. But that's for a later date. Next week, we're taking a look at Sam Neill and Possession. It's an art house film that's sure to be either a crowd pleaser or a what the fuck did I just watch. In the meantime, please, I want you to drop me an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. Tell us what you thought of Night Train Murders. Tell us what you think of Sam Neill and how much you love him because he's so dreamy. And we'll catch you next week. Stay evil.